I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. And when a girl walks in with a itty bitty waist and a round thing in your face. What the hell is that?
Congratulations to my very dear, close, personal, longtime friend, Jason Solomon, of a little number called Solomonster Sounds Off. This guy started the podcast back in 2007, Royal Rumble, favorite one, 1992. I heartily agree.
Rick Flair, you have made world. Put that cigarette out.
El Dandy, I think you're a heck of a wrestler. You're a great technician in the ring, and you're a jam-up guy.
Wait a minute. El Dandy has been wrestling in the cruiserweight division here. Please.
He's a great wrestler. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
I am talking about Macho Madness and Hulkamania. Two mega powers meeting here tonight. Hulk Hogan, what is happening?
Well, you know me, Gene, we really don't know what we're dealing with here, man.
Gentlemen, as you know, the Ultimate Warrior.
Fuck it. It's publicly stated that, damn it, who put that up? Is that $200 an hour?
See, now you use a ball to play cricket. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Very informative, we are.
Sir, damn it, settle down. You are hysterical.
Hey, real good impression there, you prick.
How about hypnosis? Let's get thrown.
Psychosis.
Whatever. He's a great wrestler.
Hey, old man, why don't you shut up?
Hey, blow it out your ass, O'Hare.
I have been with you for so many years. For you to join up with the likes of these two men absolutely makes me sick to my stomach.
You are a bona fide sicko, Jake Roberts. Gorilla Monsoon, let's get back. Get out of here. Get the hell out of here.
But I want it too, and I had to fight inch for inch to get this, and I'm not about to lay down on my back and let someone cover me.
I thank you very much. We're going to be right back.
If one day I'm called up to the big house, they'll have a funeral. I want you to bury me face down. And then all of my critics can kiss my ass.
It's business time, baby.
The Solomonster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
You like fighting a woman?
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me!
Delete! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 580 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here, sounding off for the first time in 2019. It is Sunday, January 6th, 2019. I am the Solomonster on what is the annual Sound Off Prediction Show. We take a look back at last year's predictions, the hits and misses, and look into the crystal ball for the new year. Plus, I have more New Japan thoughts coming out of that great Wrestle Kingdom show on Friday, and their New Year Dash show, which was actually a lot less eventful than usual. And we lost a legend this week. This one hurts. All that, and yes, I'm going to briefly address the whole incident that occurred. What was it? It was in the UK. I think it might have been in the UK at an indie match with the two women and stuffing the whole thing. So I'll touch on that later. I'm going to try to get through this. I know I probably sound terrible, so I apologize in advance. I'm still sick. This started a week ago. I thought by now it would be getting better. I don't know. I wake up, I think it's getting worse. But I'm not running a fever, oddly enough, so I'm trying to hold off on going to the doctor. I figure this will resolve itself on its own. But I'm going to try to soldier through this here. And let me just mention up front, if you are listening to this here on Sunday or early on Monday, there is a sale ongoing on ProWrestlingTees.com in celebration of Wrestle Kingdom. It started a few days ago. All shirts in our Sound Off store are 20% off through 1 o'clock Eastern Time on Monday, January 7th. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolomonsterSoundsOff. Make sure you punch in the code WrestleKingdom, all one word, into the promo code box at checkout, and you can get 20% off of your order. And we've got that Rawful shirt up. There's a whole bunch of shirts, over 30 shirts up in the store. And so that would be fantastic if you guys want to get a little discount on that. Also, don't forget, we are still here in the new year offering a free Audible trial to anybody who would like to sample the service. And you get one free book. It's a pretty good deal if you haven't taken advantage of it already. I don't know what you're waiting for. But if you do, make sure you use our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. They've got well over 180,000 different book titles to choose from in audio form. You can sample the service. If you sign up, you got to sign up using our link. Sample it for 30 days. If you like it, you can continue on with it. If not, you cancel. And you don't get billed. You get one free audio book, though, as part of your trial that you get to keep. And there are a ton of different wrestling books and some pretty damn good ones up there. I've recommended them before. And so just use our link and you get yourself a free book. It's great for a flight if you're planning on flying anywhere or traveling to work or even just lounging out at home. Thank you to everybody who made a PayPal donation this week. You guys rock. First roll call here for 2019. Don't forget, if you want to make a donation, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. Right-hand side of the page, you will see the PayPal button. It is always the easiest and most direct way to show your support. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out, including these fine folks. John Loose Cannon Lopez, first shout-out for Loose Cannon here this year. Same for Deadpool James Herrera. The Florida Freebird Brian Becerra. Out of Control Cody Thomas. The Portland Pop Star Paul Hamilton. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray. The Malaysian Mastermind Samuel T. The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard. Stephen Handyman Halistic. Interfere and I'll Kill You Inga Wabu. Brian the Cleaver Carpenter. The Anarchist Andrew Heller. Ian Lights Out Loomis. Hard to Beat Hansel Peralta. Thank you for the 1992 donation. Poison Pill Lindsay Manns. Millionaire Matthew Forbush. Tim Attack Before the Bell DeWolf, who is celebrating a birthday today. So happy birthday to the Wolfman. Nova Scotia Napalm Andrew Sedge. Sweet Revenge, Robson Baines. I kind of vacillated here on exactly what the correct pronunciation was. I think it's Robson Baines. I'm sure I'll be corrected if that's wrong, but thank you for the support. And Garrett Hangman Harvey, who I am told by a little birdie, is celebrating a birthday on Tuesday. So happy birthday to Garrett. Also, thank you to Andrew Golden. Thank you to Otto Bing. The Ultimate Stallion, and the Cobra, 08609, for the kind words they left for the show in iTunes. Don't forget, if you want to join our free Royal Rumble pool on Facebook, it's still early, you can get in, it doesn't cost you a thing. All you need to do, if you are part of the private Solomonster Sounds Off group, is find Zach Hulker's Royal Rumble pool post, which should be pinned to the top of the page. If not, just type in Zach Hulker, H-O-L-K-E-R, into the search box. And usually there's a search box on the side within the group. You could find his post that way. And just make sure you like the post. You don't have to leave a comment saying you're in or anything like that. You know what we should have done, Zach? I just thought of this. Although this would have been too much work. Yeah, they did All In. When All In was being promoted last year, everybody got a graphic saying, oh, so-and-so is all in. Should have done that with everybody in the post. But then you'd have to come up with like 1,200 different pictures or 1,800 pictures. So if you are all in our Royal Rumble pool, just like the post. That literally is all you need to do. If you are not in the group, try to get in. You do have to be accepted, but apply. And if you feel like you've been stuck in queue forever unfairly, you're probably just lost in the muck there. Send me a DM on Facebook just to give me a heads up, and I'll try to get you in ASAP. Right now, last I checked, we were over 1,600, approaching 1,700 participants already after only a week. Our goal is to break 2,000 again. So let's try to get there. And you guys know the way it works. Numbers are going to be randomly assigned to people starting the week before the Royal Rumble. That's when you'll get your number, so you got to give it a few weeks. Your number will be good for the men's Royal Rumble match and the women's Royal Rumble match. And it simply means this. Your number corresponds to the entrant, or the number, the order of entrance for that person. So if you get number 20, you're rooting for whoever enters those two Rumble matches at number 20 to go on to win the whole thing. And if you win your pool, you then move on to the Ultimate Rumble pool. We'll put everybody in, and we will randomly choose three grand prize winners. So that's how this is going to work. So definitely get in on that. You don't have to do anything, and it's always a good time. For those of you who don't know, I have a full review of Wrestle Kingdom 13 up on the YouTube channel as a Sound Off Extra. So if you want my full thoughts on the show, all 45 minutes worth, you can head over there. I go through, you know, each match, run down the entire card, including what I thought was just an outstanding main event between Kenny Omega and Hiroshi Tanahashi, winning back the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Also, the match with Chris Jericho and Tetsuya Naito, up until the main event, was my favorite match of the night. Got bumped down slightly to number two, but I thought that match was excellent as well. Just top to bottom, you know, not every match was, you know, five stars or anything like that, but just a tremendous effort overall, which is pretty much what you can expect every year from Wrestle Kingdom. They're very consistent in that way. Even years where, look, there are people who I saw commenting going into this show saying, well, you know, the card this year on paper looks a little weak. It's not as strong as it looked last year. And that's a subjective thing. That may well be true, but when push comes to shove and it comes down to showtime, they almost always knock it out of the park. And so I thought it was a lot of fun to watch. I watched it on a little bit of a delay. I didn't wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning because I ended up going to bed at one. So that would have been a very bad day for me. But I had a lot of fun watching it. And I said in my review, I don't think Chris Jericho is done yet with New Japan. I mean, he's already teasing other things with New Japan anyway, but even before he started doing that, I said in my review, I don't believe he is done with New Japan. And I thought we could very easily see him either challenging Okada next or Tanahashi and going for the one big title that he has never won, which is the IWGP Heavyweight Belt. Now, again, I said this before I heard about his post-match comments where he flat out said that he wants to challenge Tanahashi for the IWGP Championship. That being said, Jericho did not show up at the New Year Dash show the next day like he did last year when he showed up by surprise and attacked Naito. It was actually Jay White who called Tanahashi an old man and said he wants to challenge him for the championship. So could it be Tanahashi against Jay White for the title at Madison Square Garden instead? Could that be the big, if they have an IWGP title match, which I would think they probably would want to on that show, is that going to be the match? Is it going to be Tanahashi and Jay White? I do think Jay White will be champion before this year is over. I guess I'm spoiling one of my predictions now, but I do think he's going to end up with that title before 2019 is over. But I think Jericho against Tanahashi for the title would be a fitting headliner for that Garden show. Jericho wouldn't win, but that would be a huge match. But we've also heard Jericho say before, and this was many, many months ago, who knows what's changed since then, but we've heard Jericho on the record in interviews say that what he does in New Japan is fine, it's different, because he doesn't feel as though he's competing directly with Vince McMahon on American soil. You know, he wouldn't wrestle for another promotion inside the United States that wasn't WWE. At least not without feeling as though, you know, Vince McMahon would be okay with it. He feels he would owe that to him. Does he still feel the same way? Does he still feel the same way since he made those comments originally? That's the question. Now, of course, they could elect to give MSG another classic Tanahashi versus Okada match and just have Jay White interfere, which he would have a right to do because, you know, Jay White beat Okada at Wrestle Kingdom. Why should Okada get the title shot? It should be him. Although I think him interfering for the finish would be an absolutely, you know, great way to piss people off. I'm not sure that's, you know, how you want to end a show like that. I really think it should be Jericho and Tanahashi. I really do. I like that match. Also, very interesting to note about that New Year Dash show the day after Wrestle Kingdom. Not one single member of the Elite present at the New Year Dash show. You know, in years past, if guys were moving on, we've seen like AJ Styles, for example. He shows up the next night, gets jumped by Kenny Omega and Bullet Club and beaten down. And we didn't get any of that. We just didn't see them at all on that show. No Kenny Omega, no Young Bucks, no Hangman Page. That may say a lot about their future with New Japan, or it may say nothing at all. It's too early to know if All Elite is going to be working with them or not. We may learn more about that on Tuesday when they have their big rally, which leads me to the big announcement that was finally made, the worst kept secret in wrestling. It was made on New Year's Day. They saved it for their Being the Elite show. They built it up and they showed all the guys coming together as the clock struck 12, looking at their phones, waiting for the big announcement. And then comes the big reveal with the logo. All Elite Wrestling is now officially a thing. They are holding what they are calling a Double or Nothing rally this Tuesday in Jacksonville, Florida, which just so happens to be within walking distance of where SmackDown is going to be taking place on Tuesday. WWE is said to be monitoring the situation, whatever the hell that means. Probably just want to make sure nobody pulls any stunts out in their own parking lot. The rally is free. It is open to the public starting at 8 p.m. outside TIAA Bank Field in parking lot J. So if you are going to be in the area, if you are going to SmackDown, you want to stop there first, that is where the rally is going to be taking place. Double or Nothing is going to be the name of the company's inaugural event. So basically think All In 2. That's basically what Double or Nothing is. And if you know anybody is wondering, you know, the date of the event, the location of the event, I would just say this, consider the name. Just consider the name of the event, Double or Nothing. Look at the logo, and that should give you some sense of where this event is probably going to be taking place. Tony Khan, the co-owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, is officially the president of the company. Cody, and I think each of the Young Bucks as well, are each executive vice presidents of All Elite Wrestling. And Cody's wife, Brandy, is serving as the chief brand officer. So Brandy does branding. Makes sense. According to PW Insider, the company has had conversations with multiple television networks about a possible deal. We don't know which networks, and so I would caution anybody, if you're seeing rumors online or on Twitter about, oh, TNT and TBS. It is true that TNT and TBS, the Turner networks, recently did make a deal to bring over MMA programming, not UFC, it's I think a newer promotion, to their network, which I think caught a lot of people by surprise, and for them, that's huge. So you can never completely disqualify the idea that could wrestling end up back on the Turner networks. It's always possible. But I don't know where people are pulling this whole TNT-TBS nonsense from. I have seen no source cite any specific networks at all. So if you read that, just use caution, because I've seen absolutely nothing to back that up, other than the fact that they're having conversations with various mystery networks. I think we need to keep things in perspective when you hear that, given that, for example, Impact just signed with Pursuit Channel, which it sounds like almost nobody has. Or if they do have it, they have no idea that they have it. By the way, Impact moves to Pursuit this Friday. You may not know that because I don't see anything about it anywhere. You know, and they're switching networks in less than a week. So anyway, that's for you Impact fans. That's where you can find the show starting Friday. You know, MLW, and again, to keep perspective, MLW. And I like MLW. MLW is on beIN Sports, which is not a big network. It's great that they're on TV, but it's not a game changer. If this thing is going to be a game changer, if this thing is going to have a chance to, as Cody says here in their press release, and as somebody who does, you know, write press releases and such for a living, even I cringe when people use language like this, but this is standard press release jargon here. He talks in the press release, Cody does, about, let's change the world. That's what he says. The time to change the world is now. You're not going to be changing anything unless enough people can see you. So they're negotiating with different networks. Good. Let's see what those networks actually are before people start to get too overly excited about this. In the meantime, they've been speaking with talent about multi-year contracts. According to Pro Wrestling Sheet, the contract offers from AEW are comparable to what people are making in WWE. It doesn't say what people. There's a lot of people in WWE. What Seth Rollins is making or what AJ Styles is making, I'm sure, is very different, for example, than what Elias is making or what Zack Ryder is making or Jinder Mahal might be making. Again, context is king. It's very important to keep perspective on these things. Until we start hearing and seeing specific figures, names of networks, I remain skeptical about all of this. This all sounds great, and it's easy to want to get excited about this, but I've seen and heard too many stories of new promotions starting out and all these things before to get too excited before we have all the facts. But I hope it's true. I hope for their sake and for wrestling's sake, I hope it's true. Because AEW becoming a big success is nothing but a good thing for wrestling. Right now, the Young Bucks, Cody, Hangman Page, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky from the SoCal Uncensored faction in Ring of Honor, they all appear to be part of the roster. That appears to be the initial roster that we know of at this point. Obviously, that roster is going to have to grow a lot if they're going to put on another show, which begs the question of who do they bring in? Kenny Omega would seem to be the biggest question mark right now. He's tight with all those guys. But he's also said to have gotten a great offer from WWE. That was the big report, the big rumor this week, is that Kenny Omega has been blown away by some fantastic offer from WWE. If he's not at the rally on Tuesday, that could be a sign. AJ Styles, we know, is negotiating with WWE because his contract is set to be up in April. I cannot see him leaving. Same goes for Shinsuke Nakamura. There seem to be some people who think he might leave. You know, he might go back to New Japan, or maybe instead, if he doesn't want to move his family back there, he could stay in the U.S. and just sign with AEW. I don't see it. I don't see him going anywhere. The Revival. You know, the Revival suddenly getting what could be a push on Raw, and I think they take the tag team titles tomorrow night. That could be a sign, too. There was a report about a month or two ago, if you remember, that two WWE stars were bound for All Elite Wrestling. That they had given a verbal commitment that they were going to jump over when their contracts were up, which was coming up in April. And the initial speculation was that, it could be Luke Anderson and Carl, you know, or Carl Anderson, merging them again. Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, and then we come to find out their contracts aren't up until September. So they're not going anywhere so quickly. Which made me think, okay, well, what about Dash and Dawson? You know, WWE, maybe they're thinking the same thing. So if they suddenly get those tag team belts and a nice push on Monday Night Raw, after months of having their chain jerked around, that could be WWE's way of trying to keep them right where they are. But all of this, again, it's just speculation right now. Let's see what they announce at this rally on Tuesday. Any competition is a good thing, I say, especially at a time when so many people are disenfranchised with the current WWE product. So many people write me saying, I don't watch anymore. I gave up. I gave up 6 months ago. I gave up 6 years ago. Some people haven't been watching for years. They just listen to podcasts to keep up with what's going on. Every single one of those people. I don't care if you hate Cody's guts, if you hate the sight of his face, if you think the Bucks suck. Whatever your personal opinions might be on the individual parties involved here, every single one of those people who has ever complained or cried or sent an email in or a tweet saying, I don't watch, I can't stand it, it's so bad, every single one of those people should be rooting for this thing to take off like a bottle rocket. And for the life of me, I just cannot understand the contingent of people who seem to want to watch this thing just completely fall flat on its face. You know, if there are people who think that, you know, that they're making false promises or that there's something shady going on here or it's just a lot of hot air, then you know what? This thing is going to fizzle out and prove a lot of people right. But I don't understand the mentality, and I don't think it's a majority of people, but anybody who wants to see this thing fail and actively roots for this thing to fail, I don't get it. I don't understand the mentality at all, especially at a time when all people seem to be doing, and rightfully so, you know, when it comes to WWE and the stuff they see on television every week, is just piss, bitch, and moan about how horrible it is. Well, then why not give this thing a shot? Let's see what they got up their sleeve, and they're going to sink or swim. But I certainly wouldn't, you know, root for them to sink. That's my take on that. I just don't get the mentality of people who seem to want to see this thing just go 6 feet under. I don't get it. We had a huge loss in the wrestling world this week. And I was thinking about this. You know, what made wrestling so great to me as a kid, and honestly, even still to this day as an adult, what made wrestling so great to me was the characters. Wrestling is full of characters of all kinds. Mean Gene Okerlund, who passed away this week, at the age of 76, was a character. In front of the camera, off camera, they don't make him like Gene anymore. And it's another name from my childhood, Gunn. I know a lot of you were in the same boat as I am. Mean Gene was as much of a reason as Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, or Andre the Giant of why I am a wrestling fan today. In fact, when guys like Hogan came over, Gene literally came over with him. It was almost like part of a package deal. So when those guys all came over to WWF and changed the whole landscape, the first faces that you think of and that you saw and that I saw were people like Mean Gene Okerlund and Lord Alfred Hayes and Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura and Bobby Heenan and Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper and Randy Savage and so on and so forth. Gene was part of that whole package. And I always used to think when I was a kid, you always think, oh, one day I'll be a wrestler one day. I never thought I was going to be a wrestler. I knew I couldn't be a wrestler. I wasn't going to be a wrestler. If anything, I thought, I'll be more like that Mean Gene guy one day where I'll be holding a microphone in my hand. If I was ever going to aspire to be anything in wrestling, it would have been that, not a wrestler. In the last few years, we've really lost some truly big names in the wrestling business. If you think about it, going back, I think the last 3 years or so, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Dusty Rhodes, Bruno Sammartino, Bobby the Brain Heenan, and now Mean Gene Okerlund. And this one was a tough pill to swallow. And it is very eerie, after I had just gotten done talking about him in the mailbag on last week's show, when I was running down all of the funny corpsing moments and bloopers in WWE history and a lot of them I credited to Gene. And I pointed out three or four specific ones, specifically for Mean Gene Okerlund, you know, for you to go back and kind of go hit YouTube and check out. And I also talked about how there really is not anyone even comparable to him on television today. And those people are the ones that you know are great at what they do. The ones that you praise and you talk about when they're still alive. And not just after they pass away. So it actually kind of makes me feel happy that I was talking about him a week ago, before any of this happened. Gene was in a class all by himself. Tony Schiavone, I thought, said it best on Twitter this week. When he called Gene, he said, then, now, and forever, basically, pro wrestling's greatest stick man. Now, of course, you don't count the wrestlers in that. I wouldn't put Gene as a stick guy ahead of somebody like Ric Flair. That's not what he meant. But on the microphone, promoting and doing interviews with the talent, there has never been anyone better. And there likely never will be anyone better. And I feel pretty content in saying that because, I'm not just saying that because, oh, nostalgia. I'm not just saying that because I grew up on the guy. Yes, I, like many of you, will have a certain affinity to the people I grew up on. If you grew up as a wrestling fan in the mid to late 90s, then you probably wax nostalgic about the Monday Night Wars. If you were a WCW fan, you remember Nitro. If you were a wrestling fan in general, you remember the Attitude Era and all that. And that was a lot of fun. Not what I grew up on as a young kid, but some of you might have. So yeah, you're always going to have an affinity for what you... And think about that, by the way, because you know there are people growing up right now thinking that Monday Night Raw in 2018, in 2019, is just the greatest thing in the world. That's scary. But it's not just that. I'm not just saying there'll never be another like Mean Gene Okerlund because of a nostalgia thing. There truly is nobody who does what he did anymore. That's over. That is dead. It is a lost art. Those people simply do not exist. WWE does not allow them to exist. So I feel pretty content in saying that Gene's record and his position as best of all time is pretty safe and sound. Because he has no competition. If there's no one to compete against you, then they can't be better than you. You know, guys like him and Howard Finkel, it's less about what you can do and more about what you look like these days. You certainly will not find anybody who looks like Mean Gene on, you know, television these days. And that doesn't just go for WWE either, by the way. Whether it's him or it's the Fink, let that be a lesson to all you people aspiring to do what he did. Apparently being bald with a mustache is the kiss of death in wrestling today. And it's real easy to say, oh, you can't just go back in time, like I'm sure many of us would love to. Just because it worked 30 years ago, times change, interview styles evolve, it doesn't mean it's going to work today. And that's true. Not everything that worked back then would necessarily work today in 2019. But I guarantee you that if WWE had someone like a Mean Gene in their stable, and they produced and shot segments the way that they did back then with him, and they had somebody with a spine, and they had somebody with a personality all of their own, who could get the most out of the talent that they have, the way that Gene used to have a knack for doing, the product today would be a whole lot better off for it. You cannot challenge me when I say that, because when I say that, it's 100% right, and you know it's 100% right. And they know it's 100% right, and yet they won't do it. But this is not about WWE today. I don't want to go off on that too much. This is about Mean Gene Okerlund. Now, he had a lot of health issues over the years. According to his son, he had a total of 3 kidney transplants. I knew of 2. I didn't know he had a third. In his Hall of Fame speech, he kind of mentioned, at one point, he briefly alluded to having had 2. So if there was a third one, then it would have had to have been within the last decade. Of course, the human body... most human bodies anyway, only have 2 kidneys. So that tells you the kind of problems that he had with his kidneys over the years. His son told a local TV station in Minneapolis that his father had a fall about 3 weeks ago, broke multiple ribs. His health wasn't really all that great to begin with. He was very frail. The fall just made things that much worse. You hear about that a lot. Even in my own family, I can remember stories of, I think, my great-grandmother. You know, when you have a fall... especially if you hit your head or you suffer some kind of serious injury, you hear about an older person having a fall. It's not a good thing. And in Gene's case, it just sort of began this downward spiral for him. And then 4 days before he died, he was admitted to a nursing home. The day that he died, he was complaining of having trouble breathing. They rushed him to a hospital, and he passed away not long after that. He had no background in wrestling when Vern Gagne asked him to fill in as an announcer one week on his AWA TV show. His announcer was out for whatever reason that week. Gene was working at that television station doing something completely different. I think he was working in sales. And Vern just said to him, look, have you done this before? He said, no, he's never called wrestling a day in his life. He doesn't know anything about it. And Gagne just said to him, look, just call what you see. And that was how he got his start in the wrestling business. Just call what you see. What a novel concept. Jesse the Body Ventura, he is the man who came up with the nickname Mean Gene. It was not Hulk Hogan. That was a Jesse Ventura thing. There was a promo in the AWA where he once referred to him as the Mean Gene hot air machine. And so that's where the nickname came from. And one of the great things about watching old Mean Gene interviews, and it stands out more so today, obviously, he rarely, if ever, let the wrestlers push him around or bully him around. He stood up to them. He wasn't just a warm body in a suit. He had his own personality. When a heel did something dastardly, not that he would never, you know, feign fear, but when a wrestler would do something really dastardly and vicious, he would react like it. You know, he would sell it and put it over by letting everybody know what an awful, terrible human being that he thought that person was. He did it with Jake the Snake Roberts at that Tuesday in Texas show after Jake slapped Elizabeth in the face and he came to the back and Gene, you know, had to interview him and he called him a bona fide sicko. And at the very end, Jake's talking about, oh, I want to touch her again. And Gene just refused to even continue the promo. He said, I don't want to talk to you anymore. He said, get the hell out of here. He reacted the way that you or I would react if we were in a situation like that. We wouldn't want to be around somebody like that. In his Hall of Fame speech, Gene said that while Jesse Ventura came up with the name Mean Gene, he said it was Hulk Hogan who etched the name in granite, which is 100% true. Hogan was the man who inducted Gene into the Hall of Fame back in 2006. The two of them were thick as thieves. They were linked throughout their entire careers going back to the AWA. When Hogan jumped over to Vince McMahon, he put a word in with Vince and Pat Patterson that he wanted Okerlund to come over with him. And Gene said that he ended up making almost 3 times the amount of money he was making in the AWA to go work for Vince McMahon. That doesn't happen were it not for Hulk Hogan. And so when you think about Hogan and the stories about him, you know, putting other people down and holding them down, he certainly treated his friends like they were royalty. You look at some of his friends in the business, Brutus Beefcake and other people, he certainly took care of his own. I will say that about Hogan. He took care of his own. And let's be honest here. Hogan was a smart enough guy. He was a smart enough guy to understand that somebody like Gene was going to help him immensely, was going to help get him over as a big star immensely. He was not a threat to him. He was not threatening his spot. Hogan knew what he was doing, and he was smart to want Gene to come over. Gene really, in a lot of ways, became a very integral part of his shtick. He became a very integral part of his act. And he would go, well, let me tell you something mean, Gene, right? Those eight words, I can't tell you how many times I heard those eight words in my childhood as a wrestling fan. For all the promos they did together, I still remember the time that Gene saved him during a promo. It was the 91 Royal Rumble. And Hogan blanked. He couldn't remember Saddam Hussein's name. This is when they were doing the whole, you know, Gulf War angle with Iraq and everything. And he couldn't remember Saddam Hussein's name. He stumbled. A rare stumble in a Hulk Hogan promo. And Gene tried his best to cover for him. And even then, when Hogan suddenly got it, he still fucked it up. He called him, like, Sudan Hussein. I'm imagining him saying it in my head, and it makes me laugh. He called him Sudan Hussein. Maybe that was Saddam's wife, Sue. I don't know. But anyway, this leads into a news item here, which is that WWE has announced that Hulk Hogan is coming back to Monday Night Raw, at least for one night. Tomorrow night, he is returning to Raw to pay tribute to Mean Gene Okerlund. And this has a lot of people up in arms. Now, let me just say this. Do I think that this is part of this is WWE jumping at the chance to bring back Hulk Hogan to television with the least possible risk of him being booed? Yes. Of course it is. You'd have to be blind not to see that. And I don't think it's a way to get him back on television right now in a recurring role. For now, this is a one-and-done type of thing. Although I do think he'll be at WrestleMania, but I'll get to that in my predictions. But this, think about it, this is the safest way. Not that they planned that they knew Mean Gene was going to die, but this is the safest way for them to get him back on TV. Absolutely. Absolutely. We saw him at Crown Jewel. There was no mention. They waited until the last possible second to announce that, hey, Hulk Hogan is going to host Crown Jewel. And we all know what a shit show that whole pay-per-view was. But they didn't really promote that hardly in advance. They didn't say a word about Hulk Hogan being on that show or show highlights of it after it happened. It was like a trial run for him. This is going to be the same thing. And I'm okay with that, because I think that if you're going to pay tribute to Mean Gene Okerlund, Hulk Hogan should be there. Hulk Hogan should be there, just like in that Andre the Giant documentary that HBO did. Hulk Hogan had to be interviewed. You can't do a proper Andre the Giant documentary without talking to Hulk Hogan. So there are just going to be certain situations where I feel it's appropriate for him to speak or to show up or to just offer his comments in some way. And this is one of those times. Now look, WWE is also flying Ric Flair to Raw tomorrow night. He's the other man who deserves to be there for any kind of Mean Gene tribute that they may be doing. So Hogan and Flair being there for one night, for me, is fine. Again, I'm not going to criticize other people who are up in arms about it, because people have a right to not want to see Hulk Hogan on their TV. There are some people who will forever be offended by the things that he said, and who am I to sit there and say that they shouldn't be offended? They have every right to be offended. I'm just speaking for myself that if you're going to do a Mean Gene tribute, whatever their ulterior motives may be, I think it is perfectly appropriate to have Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair, and I actually want them on the show. I think they should be there. Now, I don't know if they're going to be out there cutting promos. I hope Hogan's not there just to pose, but I'm sure he and Flair will be there to say their piece, and Hogan will do the whole, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. Maybe it'll be like that meme that's been going around. You know, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. We're going to miss you, brother. And then Ric Flair could be there to talk about Mean By God Gene. I mean, come on. How can you have a proper Okerlund tribute without that? But when I think of famous Mean Gene moments in WWE, I think of him interviewing Hogan backstage at Madison Square Garden the night that he won the championship for the very first time. Go back and watch that. It's actually funny. Hogan either hocked a big loogie or he accidentally spit out his gum in the middle of that promo. Whatever it was, it went flying and it landed on Gene's jacket and the expression on his face. This guy was the fucking best when it came to his facial expressions during these segments. He could sell something just by his facial expression. He had this look of disgust on his face. Then, of course, Andre came in. He poured the champagne on everybody. Rocky Johnson came in at the end of that promo. He poured some right on Gene's head. I think of the training vignettes, which are just, you watch them back now, it's just reeks of just the 1980s, which is why I love it so much. The vignettes, you know, from when he and Hogan were teaming up in Minneapolis to do that one tag team match against George Steele and Mr. Fuji back in 84. And they had these vignettes where Hogan was, you know, waking up Gene at 5 in the morning and we got to go train. What are you doing? You're having bacon. You're smoking, as Hogan said, you're smoking a cigar. I guess that's like when Jim Ross was talking about the cement that got poured into the Vince McMahon's Corvette. He called it cement. I guess that's just how they pronounce it down south. I think of all those times that the Iron Sheik would call him Gene Mean instead of Mean Gene, or when he would call him an intelligent Jew businessman. The funny thing is that the two of them in real life were enough friends that Okerlund was the best man at the Sheik's wedding. I think of those classic Randy Savage promos that he was there for, you know, the cup of coffee and the big time and the beat goes on and just all of those classic interviews. I'm not sure how he was able to keep a straight face through most of them. I think of that time in 89 when the SummerSlam sign fell down behind him when he went to go start his interview with Ravishing Rick Rude. And he blurted out, fuck it, like any of us would. Now, Gene actually said that that blooper was taped earlier in the night. And what happened is when they threw it to the promo in the middle of the show, they aired the wrong tape. So for those of you wondering, hey, was that live and how else would that air? No, it wasn't live, but some person in the truck put the wrong tape on. So that's what happened there. I think of the gobbledygooker debacle from Survivor Series 91, the big egg, the giant egg. And I think Gene was the one, I think, who even teased, oh, who's it going to be? Is it going to be a wrestler? Is it going to be the Playmate of the Month? And then, of course, it's Hector Guerrero in a San Diego chicken knockoff costume jumping out of the egg. And even people that night in the building booed. But Gene got in the ring with this guy, and he was dancing around. He tripped and fell. I still, to this day, don't know if that was legit or just, you know, part of the act. But at least he didn't hurt himself, so that's good. I think of that famous night in Albany, in the 1992 Royal Rumble backstage with Ric Flair after his big victory, interviewing the new champion and stopping the interview to yell at somebody off camera to put that cigarette out. That seems to be the one thing everybody is citing I see on social media this week. Put that cigarette out. Well, I asked him about that. I'd been wondering this for years and years. And so when I had the chance to interview him and I sat down with him at WrestleCon a couple years ago, I said, I got to ask you about this. I said, what was the deal there? Who are you talking to? And after all these years, I expected some great story. It was a wrestler who lit up or something. And it turned out it was just some staff person. It was some kind of staff person who just went to go light up a cigarette. And Gene didn't smoke. I mean, cigars maybe, but not cigarettes. And he just told that person to put the cigarette out. And they obliged. And that's it. that's the answer to the great mystery. Gene was in WWE through September of 1993, when he left for WCW. Now, he didn't go right to WCW because Vince McMahon enforced a 60-day non-compete. So he didn't actually make his debut on WCW television until November. And I had some people ask me, like, can you talk about why he left? Why did he leave? He had a good thing going. Why would Mean Gene leave WWE? He claimed in his RF video shoot that he did a number of years ago, that Vince McMahon chose not to renew his contract. Simple as that. Now, I've also read elsewhere over the years that he did have an offer, but it was for less money. He would have had to have taken a pay cut. I've heard both versions, but the version that Gene tells in that shoot, at least, is that his deal just wasn't renewed. It's possible that he was offered a lower deal and is too embarrassed to say that, but whatever the case was, They really didn't make a strong play for him, and so he ended up signing for more money with WCW. Plus, they gave him a cut of their hotline money. WCW already had a 900 number. But when Gene came in, he worked out a deal where he basically took it over, and he would get a cut of it. I remember reading, I think it was like 30 or 35%. He got a nice chunk of that WCW hotline. And for as long as I live, I will never forget that phone number. It is burned into my brain. 1-900-909-9900. Kids, get your parents' permission before calling. You know, I called the WWF hotline. This is after he left the company. But I called the WWF hotline once in 94. Actually, I think it was the night of the King of the Ring pay-per-view in 94. And I called their hotline number for the first time. I called a hotline, and I never called one of those things again. Once I realized what a scam that they were. But hey, more power to him. He made money off all the little fools like me who thought they were getting legitimate information by calling. It is interesting to note, at the time, I know the Observer and the Torch each were reporting that the very first update that Gene recorded for the WCW hotline when he jumped over, he claimed that he and Vince McMahon were hardly even on speaking terms his last couple of years in the company. And he had other negative things to say about them as well, about Vince, about the company. And yet, in his shoot interview, he claims that he left the company on really good terms. And he even gave Vince McMahon a hug in his office before they left, and he gave no indication that they weren't, you know, on speaking terms for 2 years. I mean, I find that very hard to believe. So I guess, you know, look, in a way, he was no different than everyone else who would leave, and hey, he's playing for the other team now, and so he would kind of badmouth the competition, even if it wasn't true. Bobby Heenan, I have to say, Bobby Heenan was one of the only people, maybe the only guy, who left WWE and would not bash Vince McMahon. He would not say anything on Nitro when the other announcers would take little digs or Bischoff wanted them to. He would never say any cross words about the WWF. Because he was probably smart enough to realize, hey, I could end up back there someday. Why am I going to burn that bridge? Or he just really enjoyed his time there. I know he really, you know, didn't want to leave. He had a lot of fun working in WWE. And maybe he just didn't want to bash Vince. But he really is the only guy I could think of who never took any pot shots at Vince McMahon. Gene's most famous moment, I would say, in WCW came when Hulk Hogan turned heel, joined the NWO. Gene was in the ring to conduct the first interview with heel Hogan immediately after he turned, and he's being pelted by garbage. Got hit right in the face at one point with something. He's feigning disgust. How much of that was feigning, I don't know. He probably was legitimately disgusted by all the crap people were throwing into the ring. I mean, this ring was filled with garbage. Now imagine if you're somebody in Gene's position, right? You're not a big guy. You're standing there. People are throwing all of this crap. They could be throwing batteries. They could be throwing bottles. And he's got to stand there with stuff flying all around him. It's like missiles and bombs falling, like a soldier just standing in the field. So yeah, you know what? He probably wasn't very happy about that. But there he was, and he did his part to make sure that people reacted the way they wanted them to and understood that Hogan had betrayed everybody in WCW. Not just the wrestlers, the fans, and even him. After all their years of friendship, he's like, you and I go back a long way. He did his part to help put that angle over the top. And that's one of the biggest angles, most successful money-making angles in wrestling history. And Gene played a part in that. The other great WCW promo I think of when he was there was when he interviewed Bret Hart backstage about his upcoming match with El Dandy. Yes, the infamous El Dandy promo. Who are you to doubt El Dandy? I want to show that to anybody who says that Bret Hart couldn't cut a promo to save his life. Forget the U.S. versus Canada stuff in WWE, which I also thought was some of the best work of his career in 97. Just show them this El Dandy promo from WCW and then tell me that Bret Hart can't cut a promo. I'll call you a liar. When WCW went under, he and Bobby Heenan were brought in to do commentary for the Gimmick Battle Royal at WrestleMania 17, which I thought was great. And Gene did have some play-by-play experience. Not like he never did play-by-play before. He did. In the early days in WWE, and some of those old Coliseum video releases, he absolutely did do some play-by-play and actually wasn't bad at it. So they brought him in and Bobby Heenan in. It was a one-night-only thing. Unfortunately, they weren't brought back for any kind of recurring role or anything like that on television. But he was inducted, I said, into the Hall of Fame in 06. It ended with him saying that when he dies, he wants to be buried face down so that all of his critics can kiss his ass, which is an old Coach Bobby Knight quote. Pop culture, you know, I was just jotting down what are some of the pop culture references I could think of for Mean Gene, because his death got a lot of press attention this week, like more than you would think, more than most wrestlers get. That's how much of a kind of an influence he had, I think, on a lot of those fans who grew up in the mid to late 80s. I mean, I saw articles from every major press outlet this week about the death of Gene Okerlund. And back in the day, you know, he was on the Hulk Hogan Rock and Wrestling cartoon. He was on an episode of the A-Team with Hogan and a bunch of the other wrestlers. Even just recently, just a few months ago, he was in a Mountain Dew commercial with Kevin Hart. So this guy never stopped working, never stopped traveling around. He hit all the big wrestling conventions. That's how I got to interview him at WrestleCon. He came to WrestleCon in Orlando in 2017. I was doing the stuff for Fight TV, you know, that day, going around interviewing a whole bunch of different people. And I have to thank Fight TV for that, and I have to thank Damian Nelson. Shout out to him for that as well, because without his help, that doesn't happen. And that was a big deal for me personally. You know, and the kind words he had for me when we wrapped up and we were just chatting is something I'll never forget. His final WWE television appearance came last year, about a year ago now, the 25th anniversary of Raw, where he interviewed the then WWE champion, AJ Styles. I can't think of many people better than that, you know, to be his final interview. But he was actually just on the latest Edge and Christian show episode on the network, literally less than a week ago. He was one of the people they interviewed for their sketch on the mystery of kayfabe. He was the narrator for that WWE Storytime show, which is legitimately one of my favorite shows on the network. And just last week, he appeared alongside Charlie Caruso on the WWE Vintage series that airs in international markets. I mean, it may have been taped a month or so ago, but it just aired last week. And so he was still hosting shows for WWE right up until the day he died. He was married, you know, to his wife, Jeannie, 55 years, I think just shy of 55 years. His road wife was Bobby Heenan. I would call him his road wife. Bobby Heenan is up there with Gorilla Monsoon. Now all three of them are together again. And that's one hell of a roster they've got up there. And you hear about these celebrity deaths, and sometimes you hear the expression, oh, they come in threes. That was eerily true this week. There were two other notable deaths, not just the same week, but the same day as Gene Okerlund. We had Bob Einstein, the actor and the comedian. He passed away. And then Daryl Dragon, captain of the Captain and Tennille. Not only did all three of them die on the same day, them and Gene, all three were 76 years old when they died. How eerie is that? How eerie is that? 2019 is already off to a horrendous start. And the thing about Einstein, who, like I know a lot of you, I thought bore a striking resemblance, especially in his voice, to John Laurinaitis. He was best known for the Super Dave Osborne character and for playing one of Larry David's best friends, Marty Funkhauser, on Curb Your Enthusiasm on HBO. He and Larry together were absolute gold on that show. The Palestinian Chicken episode is one of my favorite all-time episodes of that or any show. And, you know, you learn something new every day. I'm reading some of these stories about Einstein passing away, and I think he had just been diagnosed with cancer. It might have been leukemia, I'm not sure, but I'm reading these stories about him, and you learn something new every day. I had no idea that he and Albert Brooks were brothers. You know, Albert Brooks, the also a comedian and an actor, he's been in a lot of different things over the years. And the two of them are brothers, and it threw me off because they don't have the same last name, so you wouldn't think that they're related in that way. Well, that's because professionally, he goes by the name Albert Brooks. That's been his stage name and his professional name now going back for a few decades. His real name, his birth name, is Albert Einstein. That is quite the sense of humor his parents must have had. And now it is time. This is the annual prediction show. I know you guys look forward to this every year. Not only do I give my pro wrestling predictions for the new year, but I take a look back at my predictions for last year, and I run through what I got right and what I got wrong. And how many other podcasters can say that they do that? Actually, you know, sports columnists and meteorologists have the best jobs in the world. You know why? They prognosticate for a living, and they never have to bring up all the times that they're wrong. I could say, oh, it's going to be sunny tomorrow, and then we get 6 inches of rain, and I get paid all the same. What a great gig, if you can get it. So let's begin here. Let's start out with what I got right in my predictions for 2018. And by the way, if you want to refer back, last year's prediction show is episode 529, if you want to verify. That was last year's show. Here's what I got right in 2018. I predicted that Shinsuke Nakamura would win the Royal Rumble match, which he did. And I also said I wanted him and AJ Styles at WrestleMania, and to the surprise of few, he did choose AJ to challenge for the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. Now, they didn't have their best match at WrestleMania, but it was the start of the heel turn for Nakamura, and they went on to have a series of matches, I think some of which were a lot better, much better, in fact, than their WrestleMania match. I predicted that Lita, Trish Stratus, and Molly Holly would all be entrants in the Women's Royal Rumble match. Again, Lita and Trish especially, not a huge shock there. Although I don't think they did announce Molly in advance. I predicted that Daniel Bryan would be cleared to wrestle again in a WWE ring. And that he would even team up with Shane McMahon at WrestleMania to take on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. I predicted that Bill Goldberg would headline the Class of 2018 WWE Hall of Fame. Also floated Eric Bischoff and Sid Justice, Psycho Sid Vicious, Softball Sid, call him whatever you want. I did float his name and Bischoff's name also as potential inductees. They did not get in, although I think both of them are equally deserving of going in. I predicted that Kane would win the election to become the mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. He is now Mayor Kane. I said Jeff Hardy would finally get that elusive Hell in a Cell match that he's always wanted, which he did, although it was not against Samoa Joe, as I had predicted. Although now he is feuding with Samoa Joe. So it just took a little bit longer than I thought it would, but they are feuding now. I predicted that Rusev would have a breakout year as a babyface, and he would not win the WWE title, he would not win the Universal title, but he would hold singles gold, which he did. He won the United States Championship on the Christmas episode of SmackDown. See, I came in just under the deadline with that one. So those are the key ones that I got right. Now, here are some other predictions that were at least partially right, not completely right. I said that Kurt Angle would wrestle Triple H at WrestleMania, which he did, technically. But I also said he would lose, and instead he won. I said Randy Orton would go heel again, which he did, but he stayed on SmackDown. He did not return to Monday Night Raw. I said EC3 would leave Impact Wrestling and return to WWE, which he did, but not as a member of the Raw roster, like I thought. He went to NXT instead, although I still think he does end up on Monday Night Raw. And I said that Chris Jericho and Tetsuya Naito would have their match at the Dominion Show in Osaka in June, which they did. But I said Naito would win, which he did not. And so now, let's get to all the predictions I got very wrong in 2018. I predicted that Ronda Rousey would win the Women's Royal Rumble match as a surprise entrant, last eliminating Stephanie McMahon, and that she would challenge Asuka for the Raw Women's title at WrestleMania and the Battle of the Arm Bars. Of course, I said Asuka would first win the championship. She'd have to win the title from Alexa Bliss at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. Neither of those things happened. Although I did say that Ronda would end up on Raw, because Raw is their baby, it's their flagship, and I just could not see them putting her on SmackDown. That'll be different later this year. We'll get to that in a second. I predicted Roman Reigns would slay the beast, Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and win the Universal title, which was very wrong. I was off, well, it wasn't very wrong. I mean, I was only off by about 5 months. I predicted The Miz and Peyton Royce as the men's and women's Money in the Bank ladder match winners. See, I got it right the year before when I predicted Baron Corbin, but last year, not so much. Instead, it was Braun Strowman and Alexa Bliss went on to win. I predicted Big Cass would return from his injury as a heel, which he did, but I said he would reunite with Enzo Amore. But with Enzo as more of a mouthpiece than a tag team partner, which I still think would have been the best role for him. I said Cody Rhodes would headline the All-In show and that he would do so against Kenny Omega after months of building to a Bullet Club split in New Japan. They did have a match, but it was not on that All-In show. I predicted Okada would continue his record-setting reign as IWGP champion throughout 2018, only to finally drop the belt to Kenny Omega in their fourth and final match, or fourth and deciding match anyway, in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom 13. And obviously we just had Wrestle Kingdom 13, and Omega did not win the championship. Instead, he lost the championship, and it wasn't to Okada, it was to Tanahashi. So, not too shabby. Not great, but not too shabby. Let's look into the crystal ball for 2019, shall we? And let's start with this one. And we're going to know the answer to this first one here within the next 24 hours or so. I believe that EC3 will debut on Monday Night Raw, and he will do so tomorrow night. And he will debut on Raw to interrupt John Cena, who is scheduled to be on the show tomorrow night. Not unlike the way that Chris Jericho debuted to interrupt The Rock on Raw all those many years ago, although I would not compare EC3 to Jericho or The Rock, but just in terms of how the debut might go down, you know. Look, what better way to make a splash in your first appearance than by going for the biggest name in the room, right? So, I could think of worse ways to make your debut on TV. Chris Jericho, I predict, will challenge Hiroshi Tanahashi for the IWGP Championship at Madison Square Garden, WrestleMania weekend, on the Ring of Honor New Japan G1 Supercard, and he will lose. And this one, really, I think is just going to come down to whether or not Jericho is sticking to his guns that, you know, he doesn't want to betray Vince McMahon by wrestling on American soil for a different company, you know, which he has held true to so far. This is going to test that loyalty. And if he has had a change of heart and doesn't mind doing so, I can't think of a bigger match for him than, you know, headlining for the title against Tanahashi. I predict that Switchblade Jay White will become the IWGP Heavyweight Champion before this year is over. Clearly, he is being groomed for that spot. I think the only question is, does it happen this year? Does it happen next year? I think it will happen this year. Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega has been a name that has been in the news a lot lately. I predict that Kenny Omega, for all this talk about him going to WWE, will strike a deal to wrestle for both All Elite Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling. Now, I can believe that WWE very much wants to sign this guy and, you know, these reports I'm reading, though, about how they've offered him a $3 million or $3.5 million contract or some ridiculous figure like that. I don't know what orifice people are pulling this out of. That just sounds completely ridiculous to me. Not that they don't have the money if they wanted to throw it at him. Believe me, they've got that Fox money. They've got that sweet Saudi money. If they wanted somebody bad enough, they could certainly do that. But to throw what probably is more like Brock Lesnar money at Kenny Omega, I don't see it. I don't see that. But it's also, you know what it reminds me of? Remember those reports? Was it last year, I think it was, or the year before, that WWE offered Dolph Ziggler a contract extension or a new contract for $1.5 million to stay? Give me a break. Even Dolph later on said, that's ridiculous. But look, I'm sure that they would love to have their hands on him and they would probably give him a great deal. I think in the end, he sticks with his buddies. And look, he is not going to make this decision based on who his friends are. The deciding factor in this is not going to be, oh boy, you know, I sure do don't want to leave my friends behind. I think that's probably part of his thinking, but the decision he's going to ultimately make is based on what's in it for him. And how sweet is the offer? What kind of freedom does he have? You know, does he think he'll enjoy and have fun working there? the whole friend angle is, I think, way overplayed. It can't hurt to have friends. But look, he's got friends in WWE, too. It's not like All Elite is the only place this guy has friends. I think that in the end, he wants to probably have the freedom to do what he wants. And he'll be able to have that freedom a lot more if he splits his time between those two companies as opposed to going to WWE. And look, I think he's got a good thing going. And a year from now, barring injury, he'll still be valuable to WWE. Yeah, he'll be a year older. He'll be 36 or 37 or however old he'll be. AJ Styles was older than that when he came over to WWE. And he was one of the few guys who came over and really got pushed, I think, at the level that he should have been pushed. That doesn't happen for everybody. AJ Styles is a great success story. You could say Nakamura to a lesser extent. He did come in and win the Rumble and, you know, get a championship match at WrestleMania and all that. Other guys don't fare as well. I do think Omega would probably do well if he were to go over there. You can't discount the whole Roman Reigns thing. Roman Reigns, everything was built around him, and WWE lost their big star. For the foreseeable future, they lost him, you know, very unexpectedly, very suddenly. And that opened up a void. Now, whether or not Omega were to come in and share that with other people or just be the guy, I don't know that he would be the guy. But, you know, I've said this before, if ever there was a time for him to make the jump, it is now. Because they need people. You know, they need that. I mean, he could come in as a heel, I guess, but they really need another big babyface to kind of plug in, I think, to that main event scene right now in WWE. So, you know, he's in pole position right now. But look, it was only last year that Omega did a live stream on Twitch. And he talked about how much it meant to him to feel like wherever he goes that he's making a difference. And that he does not want to be a robot. That was his word. I don't want to be a robot. I don't want to be controlled. Telling good stories, he said, is the thing that was most important to him. Well, you know what? If that's the case, unless he has done a complete 180 and the power of the dollar bill trumps all, then the best place for him, if they can reach some sort of an understanding, because remember, that means the two companies would have to be willing to work together. This is bigger than just Kenny Omega. But I think in the end, that's the deal that gets made. And I think Omega basically stays where he is and splits his time between the two companies. Here's a bit of a bold prediction. CM Punk will wrestle a match for All Elite Wrestling, his first match in over 5 years. When Punk was asked about the All In show last year, there was a bit of a back and forth with him and Cody, and that Cody, I think, was the one who claimed that there was an offer made or they wanted him there, and Punk said, look, nobody ever made me a formal offer. Had they done so, I would have been happy to listen to it. He didn't reject it outright. That tells me that for the right amount of money, for the right deal, and for one match at least, CM Punk would be more than happy to step back into the wrestling ring. Even better if it's not for somebody with the last name McMahon. And if AEW ends up having as much money behind it as it sounds like they do, they can afford to make Punk a very big offer for at least one match, and I think he'll take it. And look, if their first show, their first big show is going to be Double or Nothing, then you know what? They should go all out to try to get, whether it's that one guy that would move the needle or a bunch of different people, throw a bunch of money at CM Punk, get him to come in, and if he does, the question is, who is it against? Well, you know, if he signs a deal with AEW and New Japan, that man will be Kenny Omega. So that's what I'm predicting for 2019. A CM Punk AEW match against Kenny Omega. Now that being said, I predict that All Elite Wrestling will be unable to secure the kind of television deal they need to really make a mark. And instead they'll end up on a smaller station or they'll end up streaming online and pretty much just building around 2 to 3 big shows throughout the year. With that first Double or Nothing show, probably not taking place until later in the spring. But all of these people, again, I said this earlier, predicting that AEW, they're predicting doom, and it's going to be a flop. Hey, look, you may be right. Anything's possible. But I don't understand the idea of taking glee in the idea that this thing might flop and fall flat on its face. You know? Think of it like this. Another wrestling company sprouting up, as this one is, and flopping is a terrible thing for the wrestling business. Especially when you think about future companies. Forget AEW for a second. There's new companies popping up all the time. What does that say if this thing makes a big splash out of the gate and just fucking fails miserably? What does that say for future companies that sprout up looking for a good television deal when it comes to negotiating with these TV partners? You think they're going to look kindly on that? They're going to look at this and go, look, this thing's going to flop just like this AEW thing did. Remember those AEW guys we talked to? Look what happened to those guys. Why would we negotiate with somebody that doesn't even have as much money behind them? It has a ripple effect. It's a terrible thing for the wrestling business if this thing flops. And I don't believe it will. I don't believe that All Elite Wrestling will flop, as some are predicting, in 2019. I hope it does well. Because even if I wasn't a fan of it, and if I don't plan to watch, I would still root for it to succeed. I predict that this whole McMahon's taking over both shows storyline in WWE will end up putting Vince McMahon at odds with Triple H, with Shane McMahon supporting his dad, Stephanie supporting her husband, and I think we're already seeing the seeds planted with that, you know, Vince McMahon AJ Styles segment from SmackDown a couple of weeks ago, and the segment with Triple H on Raw last Monday, firing up Seth Rollins. Here's the best way to make sense of these segments, and here's my prediction for how this all goes down. And how's this for doing something different? AJ Styles, who now is the number one contender again for the WWE Championship, I predict, will beat Daniel Bryan to win back the title at the Royal Rumble. In the meantime, Seth Rollins will win the men's Royal Rumble match. But instead of choosing to fight for the Universal title at WrestleMania, he challenges AJ Styles for the WWE Championship, and he wins. Triple H's man, in the end, wins. Especially if AJ really doesn't want to be champion right now. There were reports when he lost the belt to Bryan that AJ himself had pushed for them to take the title off of him. Because, you know, he's getting tired. He's getting older. He's getting tired. He wants to spend more time with his family. He doesn't want to work as many shows. Let's assume all of that is true. There's nothing wrong with putting the belt back on AJ for 2 months, only to have him drop it to Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. It's perfectly logical. AJ gets a short run with the belt. Rollins wins the WWE Championship at WrestleMania. And with Rollins being now on the SmackDown roster, AJ Styles, after WrestleMania, he moves to Monday Night Raw. It's a lateral move in terms of talent. Now, with this being the new plan, I predict that Braun Strowman will beat Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble to finally capture the Universal Championship. Because if at first, second, third, fourth, and fifth, you don't succeed, well, why not try again? And once he wins, Seth Rollins now has less of a reason to want to challenge for the Universal title anyway, because he no longer has to worry about wrestling an absentee champion that he's been trashing on promos now. For how many months? He's been ragging on Brock Lesnar. He's never around and this and that. And look, I'd love to see the match. And it certainly feels like they may be building to that match. But if Brock loses the championship first at the Rumble, well, that all goes out the window. And now anything can happen. So all of this is tied together. Brock has to lose the belt to Braun, I think, in order to facilitate all of these other things that I'm predicting here. And so I think Braun wins the title. Drew McIntyre, meanwhile, who's been pushed very hard on Monday Night Raw, he will then win the Raw Elimination Chamber match in February and go on to beat Braun Strowman at WrestleMania to win the Universal Championship. I predict that Becky Lynch, I know I'm really going out on a limb on this one, but I'm predicting that Becky Lynch will win the Women's Royal Rumble match and go on to challenge Ronda Rousey for the Raw Women's title at WrestleMania. They have already announced a triple threat match for SmackDown this Tuesday with Charlotte, Becky, and Carmella to determine who's going to challenge Asuka for the championship at the Royal Rumble. Carmella's already in the Royal Rumble. She earned the number 30 spot by winning the whole mixed match challenge thing. Becky should not be losing to Asuka and should absolutely be in the Royal Rumble. Now, I said she had to lose at TLC. I predicted that the way to go. You have her lose at TLC. It's a three-way. She's not in there by herself. It's not like a direct loss. That's perfectly fine. And then she can chase or go after Ronda. And that seems to be the direction they're going in. But then to put her in a championship match all of a sudden at the Rumble and then just have Asuka beat her, you know, doesn't really make any sense. And unless they're going to unify the titles and they want to do champion against champion at WrestleMania, which I guess they could do, I don't see them unifying the belts, though, then it doesn't make any sense to have her go in there and lose to Asuka or even beat Asuka. So I think... and by the way, she can do both. She can lose to Asuka, then come back and win the Rumble match. I just don't see the point in beating her earlier in the show. I think Charlotte will win that match on Tuesday. She'll go on to challenge Asuka at the Royal Rumble, and that will pave the way for Becky Lynch to enter the Women's Royal Rumble match, and then she can eliminate Nia Jax to win. I predicted John Cena will get his rematch with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 35. And will win this time. And I want to say that that's going to be it for The Undertaker, but I know better than that. So when it comes to predicting Undertaker's last match or not, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Now watch, this will be the year that he actually does retire. But yes, John Cena will get his rematch. That really wasn't much of a match they had last year. For all the years of, man, that's the one big match they never really did with The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And then to basically have a glorified squash. Not that I really necessarily have a desire to see this match again, but I don't think they're done with that story between those two so quickly. I predict that Andrade Cien Almas will win the United States Championship from Rusev and will defend the title at WrestleMania against Rey Mysterio. I predict that WWE will bring back Hulk Hogan to host WrestleMania. His crown jewel appearance, even his appearance on Raw tomorrow night to honor Mean Gene Okerlund, these are all little trial runs for him. Don't be fooled. These are all little trial runs to see what the reaction is going to be. But I have little doubt in my mind he'll be at WrestleMania. And hosting the show again is the only role that makes sense, since he really can't do anything physical at this point. And so I think he will be that. Not only on Raw tomorrow night will he come out and be cheered, but he will be at WrestleMania, and all this talk about him being booed or booed out of the building, you may have pockets of it, but I think Hogan will be there, and I think Hogan will be cheered. I predict that with Vince McMahon's time being taken up more and more as the year goes on by the impending return of the XFL in 2020, Triple H finally takes the creative reins from his father-in-law for SmackDown Live when it moves to Fox in the fall. And in doing so, Shawn Michaels and Gabe Sapolsky will both gain more influence in NXT as a result of Triple H having to devote more of his time to the main roster. In the meantime, Raw will put on strong shows leading into WrestleMania. Don't be fooled. This show is going to go right back to the way it was before long, because there are not going to be any radical changes made to it. Some cosmetic moves, maybe some new faces, maybe some trades or you know, things of that nature, but not much else will change. And before the end of the year, the lows will get even lower, like they have been doing every year the last few years. And I think by Christmas, we will see Raw bottoming out at about 1.5 million viewers for those holiday shows. Brock Lesnar. Even without the Universal Championship, I predict that Brock Lesnar will continue to hang around WWE for the duration of 2019. I don't think he's going anywhere. Whether he fights in UFC or not, when this year is over, he will still be with WWE. Because, look, it is too much money for him to pass up for the schedule he has. He is doing the minimum number of dates that he needs to do and making a ridiculous amount of money, probably more than anybody else in the company. Why would he give that up? He's only getting older. Why would he give that up? Why would you give that up? If you were in his shoes, would you give that up? But I predict that he will be drafted to SmackDown just in time to make the big move over to Fox. And for the first time since 2004, Brock Lesnar will wrestle a match on SmackDown Live. Probably the premier episode on Fox, because you know they're going to want to load that thing up. And to that same end, I also predict that Ronda Rousey will be drafted over to SmackDown Live before the move to Fox. There were already reports a few months ago that Fox executives wanted her on the show. They want that show to have more of a sports feel to it than Raw has. So I predict that Ronda goes to SmackDown. I predict that The Rock will headline the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2019. I have not looked at his movie schedule, so I could be very wrong about this. Because if he is busy filming movies, he ain't going to be at the Hall of Fame. But they need a big name. And you can get a Batista. You know, there's still some people left that have big names, but Batista ain't as big as The Rock. There is no bigger name than Dwayne Johnson to put into the WWE Hall of Fame at this point. I was going to say maybe Undertaker would be as big, but no, actually he would not be. To wrestling fans, maybe. But just to people in general, the bigger name, no. Undertaker is not nearly as big as The Rock. Especially publicity-wise. I mean, come on. There's no bigger name they can induct than The Rock. And I also predict going into the Hall of Fame this year, finally, will be China. I believe China will be posthumously inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Matt Riddle, I predict, will make his main roster WWE debut on Monday Night Raw the night after WrestleMania to begin his quest to be the man to retire Brock Lesnar. He will not be successful, but he'll try. He'll talk about it, he'll try, but he will not succeed. That being said, there was a guy on Twitter, I have to mention this guy. Manju, he calls himself. He called me out for saying that Matt Riddle would end up being a bigger star. I didn't say how long it would take. I just said that in the end, Matt Riddle will become a bigger star than either Lars Sullivan or EC3. I assume he's referring when I was talking about all the call-ups, the NXT call-ups, and how there's really nobody in that class that's coming up in the next few weeks that stands out to me as being kind of the next big breakout WWE star. I don't think it's anybody in that class of six that's being called up. EC3, Nikki Cross, Lacey Evans, Lars Sullivan, Heavy Machinery. I don't think it's anybody in that class. I think you're really talking more about an Aleister Black or a Matt Riddle. And so I assume that he's calling me out for making those comments. And he says that when he first looked at Matt, he called it one of the biggest jokes he's ever heard that I said that. And he said when he first looked at Matt Riddle, he thought, who is this jobber guy? That was his first thought. And as I said to him, and I'll say it here in the prediction show, bookmark that tweet and let's come back to it in the future. And we'll see if you still find it funny. Okay? How's that sound, Manju? Does that sound okay to you? By the way, that's J-U. He spells it, not J-E-W. For those of you who may be wondering, that's not how he spells it. I predict that Adam Cole will win the Men's Money in the Bank ladder match, and that Shayna Baszler, if WWE does not do a Queen of the Ring tournament, which had been talked about a few months ago, she is my pick then to win the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. And finally, I also think that we will see that horsewomen versus horsewomen match that's been talked about for so long now. Charlotte, Becky, Sasha, and Bayley taking on Ronda, Shayna, Marina, and Jessamyn Duke. I believe we will see it, and I believe it will take place at the Survivor Series. And so those are my predictions for 2019. Chime in. Let me know. What do you think? What do you agree with? What do you disagree with? What are some of your own bold predictions for 2019? Let me hear it. I want to hear what you guys think. Raw last Monday night was a taped show. It was the last of the holiday shows. It was the New Year's Eve show. There were over 3,800 people who voted in the Raw poll, which is a lot, but unfortunately the percentages were not what WWE, I'm sure, would like to see. Only 14% voted thumbs up on this show, 12% thumbs down, 74% said they did not watch. And I can tell you that I was among the 74% this week. I just did not care. It did not help. I was sick this week, but and still am. But the last thing a sick person should have to do is to watch an entire episode of Monday Night Raw. If somebody is ill, I would not prescribe a full episode. I would not prescribe half an episode of Monday Night Raw. So, no, I did not watch all of Raw Monday night. By the way, I wouldn't wish that on a healthy person most weeks. But more to the point, it was the New Year's Eve show. It was the New Year's Eve show. It doesn't matter. Just like Christmas. It doesn't matter. I'm not saying that's right. You have people who tune in and give their time to watch these shows. They should matter, but they don't. What matters is what happens tomorrow night. It's all about the first live show back tomorrow night, January 7th. Now, I did watch clips of the cage match with Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler. They at least gave McIntyre a dominant win. I didn't think it was anything special. They just need to keep staying the course with this guy. Keep staying the course with him through WrestleMania. If my prediction from earlier comes true, he'll be the Universal Champion in the next few months. I also laughed when I saw Apollo Crews won the, what was it called? Was it the Fresh Start Battle Royal, they called it, to face Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental title later on in the show. I laughed given that I just got done watching Apollo Crews win a Battle Royal at the Madison Square Garden show. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? To earn an Intercontinental title match in the future. So even though he wrestled Ambrose and he lost last Monday, he still owed a championship match, at least at MSG. He is still owed an IC title match. Seth Rollins and Triple H, I kind of briefly touched on this earlier. They had a segment in the ring. Triple H was firing up Seth Rollins. He talked about how, I want to see the ruthless Seth Rollins come back, the Rollins who would do anything to win. I do think there is a connection, as I said in the predictions, I do think there is a connection with what they did on SmackDown with Vince and AJ Styles. They're sort of gravitating to their guys, it seems like. And I think that it does lead to a match at WrestleMania. As much as I would like to see Seth Rollins be the guy who, you know, takes down Brock Lesnar, the thought of Rollins challenging Styles for the WWE title, that is a match worthy of top billing at WrestleMania. Or at least co-headlining with Rousey and Lynch. I also, by the way, I love this subtle idea that they seem to be pushing. I don't know if anybody else picked up on this. It's kind of like the storyline narrative that Raw sucks because Baron Corbin was the GM. It's all Baron Corbin's fault. Now they seem to be very subtly pushing the narrative here that the TV has sucked in part because guys like AJ Styles and Seth Rollins haven't been giving us their all. They have not been giving us the best of what they can. I mean, isn't that what Vince McMahon basically was saying to AJ Styles? You're not being ruthless enough. We're not getting the beast within AJ Styles. We're getting the sort of sanitized, toned-down version of AJ Styles, an inferior version of AJ Styles. That's basically what Triple H said here about Seth Rollins. And these are two of their top stars. They've been too soft. They're partially to blame for the ills of WWE television. I love it. Anyway, Raw this week is the first live show of the new year. It's all hands on deck. They are loading this thing up. They have appearances by John Cena, Brock Lesnar, Braun Strowman, and now Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair will be there to pay tribute to Mean Gene Okerlund. Plus, Bobby Roode and Chad Gable defend their Raw tag team titles in a rematch against The Revival. They need to do a title change here. This is the place to do it. And I think it's going to happen. Now, SmackDown was also a taped show from Pittsburgh, I think, this week. This is the second week in a row, by the way, that SmackDown has beaten Raw in the ratings. They were up over 2 million viewers this week, and that was with some stiff bowl game competition on TV. But yeah, this was the second week in a row. Now, again, does it really matter? Not really. What matters is what happens this week and next week when they're back live. Does this trend continue? Does SmackDown continue to beat Raw? I would think not this week, just because Raw is the show they're building around. I don't see them hyping SmackDown the way they're hyping Raw this week. So they're throwing a whole bunch of big names at this show. I think Raw will probably easily beat SmackDown this week, but we'll see. Could be an interesting story to follow here in the early part of the year. John Cena was back on SmackDown this week. That hair, oh my God. I warned you guys. I told you guys when I saw him at the Garden show. I said, this hair has got to go. I get he's about 40 now. Probably should be grateful he even has hair. I look at a guy like William Regal, right? William Regal always kept like a kind of a small cropped haircut, right? And then a few years ago, seemingly out of the blue, his hair begins to grow and grow and grow and grow. And actually, it's more than a few years. Probably been like a decade now. But he's got this long, flowing hairstyle. The guy's getting older, and he's got more hair on his head now than he's probably ever had in his entire life. But it works for him. I don't know what the fuck John Cena is doing here. He just looks completely ridiculous. But hey, it's his hair. He can do what he wants. He wants to look like a fool. That's his prerogative. Becky Lynch came out.
And they had an interplay between Becky Lynch and John Cena where Becky basically was saying, you know, you wanted a man to come out here, but you got the man. And, you know, if you got a problem with me taking my place here on this show, Nikki Bella is not going to be the only woman to drop you. And everyone, of course, you know, they react to this cheap line. Anyway, this all built to a tag match. It was Cien Almas and Zelina Vega losing to Cena and Becky. End of the match, Becky actually threw Cena out of the ring and put Vega in the disarmer to pick up the win. Now, when the match was over, Cena went to go shake hands with Becky outside the ring. Becky went in for the handshake, but then she swerved him. And she did Cena's "you can't see me" hand motion and walked away. I thought this was very effective as far as a way to get Becky over even more by taking somebody like Cena, who still has a lot of equity, and basically letting her trample over him. I thought it was very effective in that way. Now imagine, though, the way that Cena put this woman over here. Imagine if John Cena had put the Nexus over as strongly as he put Becky Lynch over here. Wade Barrett might still be on the roster today. Main event was a fatal five-way to determine a number one contender for Daniel Bryan's WWE title at the Royal Rumble. AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, Randy Orton, Mustafa Ali, and Samoa Joe. Sounds like a hell of a match on paper. Turned out to be a very good match. Let me just say this. For all the people complaining about how is this shaking things up, it's more of the same. I thought we weren't going to get automatic rematches anymore. AJ won a five-way match. He earned the right to challenge for the championship again. At least they could explain it by saying, look, logically, this guy had a fight for the shot. He wasn't gifted the shot. He was in a fatal five-way. He just so happened to be the guy who won, so he gets one more opportunity at the championship. I'm okay with that. After the Rumble, they can move on. And if AJ beats Bryan, Bryan will not be owed a rematch, because again, no automatic rematches. So Bryan would not be afforded the same opportunity unless they do a six-pack challenge or something, and then he wins, which I don't see happening. But I do have to say this. These nicknames that they're giving these guys, these nicknames have got to die. I'm sorry. This has to stop. It is bad enough that we have to listen to them say, the new Daniel Bryan every single week. And God bless Daniel Bryan. He's doing his heel shtick. Evil environmentalist. I think it's great. Keep rocking it. That's fine. The new Daniel Bryan. What is this? What is he? The new Coke? The fuck is this? And they say it all that. This is one of the things I absolutely detest about this company. This is one of the things that people hate about this company. It's such a small thing, but boy, does this grate on the nerves. It just sounds so unnatural. The almighty Bobby Lashley. We get it. We get it. His nickname is the almighty. Do you really have to fucking say it every 5 minutes? Do you really have to say, oh, somebody new might be tuning in every 15 seconds. Fuck them. I don't care. Those people will get the picture if you cut in half the number of times you say the almighty Bobby Lashley. You don't have to say it every 5 seconds. Same thing here, the new Daniel Bryan. You don't have to say it every time you say the guy's name. Now, it's the real AJ Styles. It's the real AJ Styles against the new Daniel Bryan. From now on, I want to be called the annoyed Solomonster. Cut this shit out. Anyway, that came out of nowhere. But this match was really good. Given the talent involved, I mean, for God's sakes, how could it not be? Ali went for the 054 in the corner. He missed. Joe locked him in the coquina clutch. Ali got the ropes. This was a pretty frenzied finish here. So Ali gets the ropes. Mysterio nails Joe with a 619. Then a 619 on Ali. Orton hits an RKO on Ali. Has the match won, but Ray breaks it up. 619 to Randy Orton. Ray's on the apron. He's getting ready to do the drop of the dime or the splash or whatever it is that he's going to do. But Joe grabs him, comes up from underneath him, gets him in a powerbomb position. Ray counters that on the floor into a Rana. Now both guys are down. Meanwhile, back in the ring, Randy Orton is still horizontal. AJ hits a springboard 450, and he picks up the pin. And so AJ Styles will meet Daniel Bryan once more at the Royal Rumble. And this time I think it would make sense for this to be a stipulation match. And I think the stipulation that would make sense would be for this to be a submission match. You know, the battle of Brian's label lock against AJ's calf crusher. AJ's been winning a lot of matches with that calf crusher. God knows he beat it, Samoa Joe a whole bunch of times with it. So I think a submission match stipulation for these two guys would be appropriate here. Now, we have the Becky Lynch Savage Tweet of the Week, as it has been renamed. And this week, it goes to who else? Becky Lynch. It's always fun when she roasts Corey Graves on Twitter. And I'm sure the two of them are just bosom buddies. But it's still fun. Somebody tweeted at Graves that they wish that he could have a romance angle with Becky Lynch. To which Graves responded, "Me too. She could use it." Well, you knew this wouldn't end well for him, and it didn't. Becky replied back and said, "Of all the things I could use in my life right now, a romance with a middle-aged emo poured into skinny jeans is not one of them. Maybe you should wait until Monday to reply, you know, when you'll have help with what to say." And by the way, I this would be an appropriate place for me to mention this too. Road Warrior Animal, I'm sure you've read about this. Road Warrior Animal, on his podcast, was none too happy about Becky's response to him, to what he said recently about her. I didn't talk about this last week, so I'll cover it now. Now, let me just say in defense of Road Warrior Animal, he did, when he made these initial comments about Becky Lynch, he did praise the women in WWE as having stolen the show at WrestleMania. They stole the show at TLC. He had some complimentary things to say about the women. But he also said that when you have the women headlining your shows and having the best matches on the card, there's an issue there. There's a problem in the wrestling business, he said. And boy, that didn't make people very happy when he said that. And really, the way he said it really was just a stupid thing for him to say. I mean, I could see where in a way he's saying, look, the guys have to step up their game because they're being outshined. You could take that as a compliment, right? About how good some of the women have been. But yeah, the way he said it, that I could see why people would be up in arms about that. But again, I personally, when I first heard him say that, took it as a dig at the men to, hey, guys, step up your game here. You're being outclassed. He went on to say in that interview that Becky Lynch should drop the whole man shtick. I'm the man. She should drop that and just be a pure white meat babyface who never quits. Those are the kinds of babyfaces that work, he said. When you come out there with an attitude and you're strutting around like a tough guy, anybody that's been in a fight can see right through that, and I'm just being realistic because that's what works in this business, he said. Imagine, by the way, giving Steve Austin that advice in 1997. Stop strutting around with an attitude like you own the place. Just be a pure white meat babyface. I would say Becky is doing just fine, strutting around with a chip on her shoulder. She's going to get herself a WrestleMania main event with Ronda Rousey out of it. Something that never would have happened had she taken advice from Road Warrior Animal. Becky was a pure white meat babyface for the last 3 years? People liked her. Didn't get her fuck all. So, they're trying something different. She found something that seemed to be working. She goes on social media. She burns people. She comes out on television. She burns people. Calls them a bitch. People react. Is it going to be enough in the future for her to move tickets and things like that? We don't know yet. There's no sign of that yet. So we don't know, you know, that it's necessarily working in that way, but it's working for her. It's gotten her more attention than she's had at any other point during her entire career. Why should she take advice now from Road Warrior Animal? Oh, don't do what's been working for you. You should do this instead. You know what? Thank God this guy didn't get an agent's job in WWE. If that's the kind of advice he'd be giving to Becky Lynch right now. But when Becky initially read those comments, she saw the headline on the WrestleZone website. WrestleZone had an article, and the headline was, "Road Warrior Animal Thinks Becky Lynch Should Just Back Off the Man Thing." Well, this all started because Becky fired back and said, "The first four words of your headline are a lie." That being, "Road Warrior Animal Thinks." Turns out Animal didn't like that very much. And on his podcast, he said Becky needs to get over herself. She did. That's exactly what she did. She did get over herself, hence why she'll be in the main event of WrestleMania. But he said, oh, when Becky Lynch can achieve what I've achieved in the sport of pro wrestling, then she can call me out. And he went on to talk about how you've won one title in WWE, Hawk and I won 22 titles in promotions all over the world. Sounds to me like Animal is the one who needs to get over himself. So, because he was booked to win titles in different promotions, Becky has no right to respond to his nonsense. Am I understanding this correctly? She hasn't earned her stripes, he said. What the hell does that even mean? Hasn't earned her stripes? This guy's living in a time warp. What Animal did worked for Animal. What Becky is doing right now has gotten her more attention, more press, more television time. You got to understand something. On these shows, Raw, SmackDowns, 5 hours of television every week, these people are fighting for television time. She's gotten more television time in the last 3-4 months than she probably has all 3 years that she's been on the main roster. I don't think she needs any advice from Road Warrior Animal. Let's take a few mailbag questions. If you have them, you can always email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. Some people on Twitter wanted me to know if I was going to talk about this tuna incident. I can't even believe I'm talking about this. With the woman who pulled a bloody tampon or a fake bloody tampon or whatever it was, yanked it out of herself in the middle of a match. I think it was over in the UK. It wasn't here. And shoved it into her opponent's mouth. We're only 6 days into the new year, and we've already peaked. What did I think about it? I thought it was fucking gross. That's what I thought about it. And I saw on Twitter her argument is, hey, wrestling's fake, you know. Oh, gee, thanks, I didn't know. Wrestling's fake, you know, and, you know, if guys can use their penis in storylines like Joey Ryan does, then why can't women do the same with their vaginas? What about equality? You know what? You're right. She's right. She's absolutely right. And you know what? I hate that stuff equally as much. I hate that Joey Ryan dick stuff too. The dick stuff works for him. I'll give him credit for that. He makes money off of it. He's made a whole career out of doing the dick stuff. So good for him. This stuff here, and by the way, her name is Priscilla Kelly. She had a match in last year's Mae Young Classic, if it sounds familiar, which tells me that she would probably like to end up back at some point in WWE or, you know, in NXT. She's only 21 years old, has her whole career ahead of her. If that is her goal, if her goal is to make it onto the big stage and make it back to WWE, then this was a pretty stupid thing for her to do. But if she's, hey, if she's just having fun, like she said in another one of her tweets, oh, it's all about having fun. And if she's having fun wrestling 21 and over shows in front of 500 people or 300 people or whatever, then she should certainly have the right to do that. Just like I should have the right to say that I think it's gross and dumb. Not unlike Conan getting shanked on an MLW show a few weeks ago. Just like that was dumb. Let's leave the murder and attempted murder to Lucha Underground. They've got the market cornered on that pretty well. Ben in San Diego, what do you think of the whole Toni Storm situation and the hashtag on social media supporting her this past week? Yeah, that's another terrible thing that I saw this week. I think what happened to her is really shitty. Toni Storm became the latest hacking victim. She had nude photos of herself leaked on the internet. I don't know if it was just photos or video too. It was crappy either way what happened to her. People were tagging her in it. They were harassing her to the point where she deleted her Twitter and she deleted her Instagram. So she is no longer on social media for the time being. She has gone silent and she is scheduled to wrestle Rhea Ripley for the NXT UK Women's Championship at the first NXT UK TakeOver show, TakeOver Blackpool, which is taking place this Saturday, which I almost completely forgot about. But yes, this Saturday, January 12th, is the NXT Blackpool show, which I am hopeful I will be able to watch and talk about here on the show next week. But this is not going to affect her career at all unless she lets it. And I'm sure right now she's down in the dumps and depressed or whatever, and she'll get over it. And she'll be fine. Her career is not going to be negatively affected by this at all. People have been rallying around her all week, showing their support, even though she can't see it because she's not on social media. she'll move past this fairly quickly. It's not going to, again, negatively impact her career. She's not going to get in trouble for it. The people harassing her or blaming her, shaming her, these people need to get a fucking life. You know, and by the way, shout out to Defiant Wrestling over in the UK, the former What Culture Pro Wrestling. Somebody let them know about this loser on Twitter. They snitched on this guy who it looks like he's attended some of their shows in the past. Somebody picked up on the fact that he was planning on going to their next show. He had been to their shows before. And some of the things he was tweeting, you know, he wasn't just asking, oh, anybody got the nudes? He's asking to see her nudes. And in the same tweet, he's tagging like official WWE Twitter accounts. And then he's saying some other stupid shit. Well, anyway, when Defiant was alerted that this guy goes to their shows, they responded and they tagged him. Although I think this guy had already deleted his own Twitter at that point. But they tagged him anyway, and they said that he is not welcome on their show. They had a show coming up yesterday. They said, you are not welcome at our show. You had bought two tickets to the show. We have canceled your two tickets, so you can explain to your friend why you're not allowed to come to the show now. And they said, you're no longer welcome. And they said, don't bother buying tickets from somewhere else because we're going to make sure your face is on the door. So we're going to see you if you try to get into this building, and we ain't going to let you in. I love it. Defiant Wrestling, I salute you. William from Calgary, seeing as there are a total of 7 gaijin, that is, foreigners, who have won the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, how would you rank the 7 wrestlers from worst to best? And he listed their names here, and they are Scott Norton, Bob Sapp, Kenny Omega, Salomon Hashmakov, Big Van Vader, AJ Styles, and Brock Lesnar. Now, Hulk Hogan is not counted among them, even though he won the first ever IWGP tournament back in 83, because the actual championship wasn't created until after the last tournament, I think it was in 87. Of the seven names, the one who I really did not know a whole lot about was Hashmakov. I put him dead last. I've heard the name before, but didn't know much about him. He had one run with the IWGP belt, lasted all of a month and a half. And in his very first title defense, he lost the championship to Big Van Vader. So I would put him dead last. Number 6, I would put Bob Sapp. I used to read about Sapp all the time in The Observer. Meltzer would go on and on about Bob Sapp and what a big deal it was that he would come in and he was doing MMA. And I don't remember if he worked Pride. He probably did work Pride shows. But I used to hear the name Bob Sapp all the time. And I've heard, you know, Meltzer mention, oh, what a big star he could have been. He had been negotiating possibly to come to WWE at one point, and it never panned out because they probably couldn't pay him enough. Bob Sapp was just a big, charismatic guy. And he was the IWGP champion. He only defended the title one time against the young Shinsuke Nakamura. After that, he had to forfeit the title due to an injury that he suffered in MMA. You know what? At least he had one successful title defense. That's one more than Hashmakov. So I put him at number 6. Number 5, I would go with Brock Lesnar. This was after he left WWE and WWE had filed a restraining order to stop him from wrestling. Of course, they lost. This was the whole thing where he had signed, there was like a 10-year non-compete, which is so ridiculous. It was never going to be enforced in court. And Brock beat them in court. Anyway, he won the championship in his very first match in New Japan. And he too, like Bob Sapp before him, he then beat Shinsuke Nakamura in his first defense. So yes, there is a match, if you look it up, between Brock Lesnar and Shinsuke Nakamura. He had another couple of defenses after that. Then he refused to fly back to Japan and drop the belt. He kept the belt. He would not give it back. I think at the time he was claiming that New Japan had stiffed him on some money that he was allegedly owed. Who knows if that's true. Instead, he jumped over to Antonio Inoki's new promotion. Inoki had just started a new promotion called the Inoki Genome Federation, I think. It was IGF, I think. And Inoki, of course, is the one who originally founded New Japan. He was the founding father of New Japan Pro Wrestling. But that match in Japan that you probably have seen before, between Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle, that was for Inoki's promotion for the quote-unquote IWGP belt. Now, I say quote-unquote because New Japan, once Brock refused to come back initially, they stripped him of the championship. They had a new belt made. which was won by Hiroshi Tanahashi. So even though Angle won the quote-unquote IWGP title from Brock, his reign is not acknowledged by New Japan. Kurt Angle is not an acknowledged IWGP champion. So anyway, that's Hashimikov, Sapp, and Lesnar. Number four, I was going to say Scott Norton, who had great success in Japan, even though he was mid-card at best in WCW. I was going to say Norton, but when I compare his record with Kenny Omega's, it's actually more impressive. And so, number four, I'm going to go with Kenny Omega. Omega beat Okada to win the title at Dominion in June of last year. I want to say he has defended the championship three times, or four, I think four times, including the loss to Tanahashi the other night. But he defended it against Cody. He defended it against Ishii. He defended it against Cody again and Kota Ibushi in a three-way. And then the match with Tanahashi at Wrestle Kingdom. So that's not a big resume of defenses, but it's more than the guys I just mentioned before him. I did consider slotting him higher on this list just because the match with Okada I thought was just so damn good. Number three would be Scott Norton. You may remember Scott Norton. Scott Flash Norton from WCW was never really a big star, but in Japan he was. He was a bigger name in Japan. He held the IWGP belt two different times. And so for that reason alone, I would put him at number three. Number two, I would put AJ Styles. He also had two runs with the championship. But the matches he had, especially that Dominion match a few years ago with Okada. What is it about Okada and Dominion, by the way? But that match was insanely good. Just an insanely good match. And number one, I think the greatest gaijin to be IWGP champion is Big Van Vader. He held that title three different times. He was scary as all hell. Just a big bull of a man who beat the piss out of everybody he stepped in the ring with. But yeah, those three title reigns, I think, put him at number one. And finally here, Nicholas in Lowell, Massachusetts. If you had the option of making more money and being a jobber, or making less money but being the world champion, which would you prefer? I'm going to defer to something I heard Bobby the Brain Heenan once say, a very wise man in the brain. He said a lot of guys that he used to work with and that he used to be around, he didn't call them marks or anything like that, but he said they forgot that it is the wrestling business. They're there to make money. He said he knew guys that if you gave him the option of wrestling for $1,000 a week and putting other people over or making $500 a week and being the champion, that they would choose to be the champion because then they'd have the belt, even though they'd be losing out on $500 a week, which is a lot of money. I would take the money. I would take the money and be the best damn job guy in the world. But, you know, today, and when he said that, it was many years ago. Today, though, that may be different. I mean, look, if you're the champion, because the champion could be on the cover of the video game, might have opportunities that, you know, default job guy number nine might not have, where you can make more money on top of whatever your base pay is. So there's other kind of circumstances, I guess, to consider now. But if you're asking me in the most basic terms, more money and losing or less money and winning, I would take money every single time. I think Bobby knew what he was talking about.
It's time to rumble! It's time for the Royal Rumble!
It is time to continue with our top 10 countdown of the greatest championship matches. Top 10 championship matches in Royal Rumble history. This week we are up to number 4. Now, last week we cracked the top 5, with number 5 being the triple threat match for the WWE title at the 2015 Royal Rumble. This week at number 4... it is not only one of the greatest championship matches in Royal Rumble history, it is one of the greatest championship matches in WWE history. Representing the SmackDown brand, Kurt Angle defends the WWE title against Chris Benoit at the Royal Rumble 2003, a pay-per-view that has the distinction of having one of the best and one of the worst championship matches in WWE history. The fact that both matches were placed back-to-back on the show only accentuates the point when you watch it back. It really just stands out to you, the contrast between these two matches. Now, let me talk a little bit here about Steiner and Triple H. That was the other match. It was Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump, who had just come to WWE a few months earlier, challenging Triple H here at the beginning, really, the beginning stages of his reign of terror for the World Heavyweight Championship on Raw. One of the most disappointing matches with two big names that you'll ever see. And just bad. It was just a bad match. The first half was just dull, more than anything else. But the longer it went, the worse it got. It gets a bad rap because of that second half, and it is well deserved. It just fell off a cliff. Add to that, it had a cheap DQ finish to boot. So it's bad enough you have to sit through a slop fest like that. To do that and then get a cheap DQ finish, yeah, people were not very happy about that. Steiner couldn't do much. I can't even put it on Triple H. Scott Steiner at this stage could not do much other than suplex. The difference is between him and Brock Lesnar, before people pipe up, oh, well, that's all Brock Lesnar does. Well, let me tell you the difference. The difference is that, first of all, Brock Lesnar does have, as you saw last week, if you watched that triple threat match from 2015, he has an explosiveness about him that Scott Steiner just did not have at this stage of his career. But the other thing also is, I get the sense that Brock Lesnar has not forgotten how to wrestle. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that this NCAA collegiate champion here, who did pro wrestling for a long time before he left, didn't just wake up one day and forget how to pro wrestle. He could do a lot more than he does. He just chooses not to because he doesn't have to. In his mind, he can just suplex people around, suplex city bitch, sell a little bit, hit an F5 and go home. Scott Steiner here, I don't think he could do anything else, even if he wanted to. I mean, he probably did. He probably wanted to go out there and just have a bang-up performance, but he couldn't do it. Physically could not do it. The most embarrassing moment of that match was him going to give Triple H a double underhook suplex and falling down. He fell backwards and fell down, and the crowd booed, and it was very sad. And they built up to this match, by the way, with weeks of pose downs and arm wrestling and push-up contests. You watch this match and you realize why. Steiner just could not do much. But this is not about Triple H against Scott Steiner. I couldn't help it. I had to talk about that. Contrast that with what came immediately after this match. Contrast that with Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. Two of the absolute best ever inside the ring. This match was a fitting conclusion to a story that dates back with these two really all the way to WrestleMania 17 in 2001, that very first match they had. Right on through them teaming up together, winning the tag team titles on SmackDown late in 2002, which, by the way, that's another match I cannot recommend enough. The finals of the WWE Tag Team Title Tournament at the No Mercy pay-per-view in 2002, Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit against Edge and Rey Mysterio. One of the greatest tag team matches in the history of this company. Benoit's actually got two of those to his name in 01 and 02. Not just this match that I just mentioned, but the first one being the Raw match after Judgment Day, where it was him and Jericho against Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H. That was the match where Triple H tore his quad. So back-to-back years, Benoit has the distinction of being part of two of the greatest tag team matches in company history. But anyway, going through that period where Angle and Benoit won the tag belts right on here up to this match, culminating in this match for the top title in the company, make no mistake, the WWE Championship was the top title. I don't care how it was positioned by WWE at the time. And it was positioned, I think, as it should be, with the WWE title being the top belt, because that's the match that headlined WrestleMania 19. That was the top title in the company, not the one that was handed out of a briefcase to Triple H. Angle and Benoit, they only held those tag team titles on SmackDown for about a month before dropping them. They would bicker back and forth. They couldn't get along. They always tried to one-up each other. It was one-upsmanship between them. Angle then won the WWE Championship from Big Show at Armageddon in December of 02. Benoit then beat Big Show on TV to become number one contender, and so here we are. Team Angle. Angle had Team Angle at the time, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. They were ejected early, so this thing was one-on-one, fair and square. No interference, no cheating or funny business or anything like that. In watching this match back, it had been so many years since I'd seen it. What really stood out to me in watching this, well, two things. Number one, how physical this match feels. The chops are just blistering. The slams are hard. I mean, these guys beat the holy hell out of each other in this match. And two, the first half of this match is good. I would even say maybe very good. But it did not stand out to me as being as good, I guess, or as action-packed as I remembered it being. The first half was very pedestrian in that way. But it was good. But it wasn't anything that really screamed best title match ever to me. That doesn't really come until the second half. That's where things really start to pick up. Once Angle kind of lowers the strap on his singlet, that's where things kick into the next gear. Benoit hit a diving headbutt. I swear to God, if he went halfway across... He didn't go halfway across the ring. He went a good 75% across the ring with this head. He flew with this headbutt across the ring. And it's eerie now to look back and watch him hitting that move for obvious reasons. But from there, they were trading finishers back and forth. Crippler crossfaces into Angle slams and ankle locks. The crowd wanted badly for Kurt Angle to tap out on that last Crippler crossface. But Kurt rolled through. He turned it into an ankle lock. Benoit tried furiously, just kicking at him and trying to kick him off and kick him off. And Kurt's like a pit bull. He won't let go. And finally, Angle pulls him to the center of the ring. Grapevines the leg. Benoit's got nowhere to go. He taps out. The crowd loved this match so much, they gave Benoit a standing ovation when it was over. And Benoit pounded his chest, and he saluted the crowd, and it was a great moment. All of Benoit's stuff is very bittersweet now to look back on. You get mixed emotions, but I can look back on these matches and appreciate the hell out of them for what they are, which is some of the best matches that have ever taken place in WWE. And it is a shame. It is a shame that they will not ever again get the attention that they deserve because of what he did. And I completely understand it. That's the way it has to be. But that doesn't mean that we can't feature these matches and countdowns like this. WWE might not. I can see why they wouldn't. But it's not going to stop me from featuring these matches here in this countdown. This is a wrestling match. That's the best way for me to describe it. This is a professional wrestling match. This is what a wrestling match should be. There's not a whole lot else to recap here. In turn, there were no ref bumps, there's no weapon shots, there's no table bumps, there's no shocking swerves, or anything of that nature. It's just a great pro wrestling match that felt like a real sporting contest between two guys wrestling for the championship. The championship was the most important thing in the world for those 20 minutes. And like I said, the first half was fine, if not, you know, unspectacular. Or fine if unspectacular, I should say. But then it kicked into second gear, and it just gets better from there. Basically the exact opposite of the Steiner-Triple H match, which peaked, I'd say, in the first 5 minutes and just got steadily worse. This match should be required viewing, even if I came into this countdown thinking that I would go as high as 2 or 3 on my list. I thought this was going to end up at number 2 or 3 on this list when I initially conceived of the list. It wasn't until I went back and I watched everything over again that I felt like I couldn't put this higher than 4. Which is really just, it's not a knock on the match. It just means that there's some really good matches here in this countdown. Coming out of the match, just to follow up on the fallout here, Benoit slid back down the ranks. He ended up teaming with Rhino at WrestleMania in a losing effort for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. Kurt Angle, of course, lost the WWE title to Brock Lesnar in the WrestleMania main event, in a match where Lesnar nearly killed himself on a shooting star press. Angle then had neck surgery. He opted for less invasive surgery instead of the traditional spinal fusion, which would have kept him out for over a year. And it got him back in the ring in about 3 months. That's the good news. The bad news is that it was only a few months after he came back, the surgery was completely undone with one chair shot to the head by Brock Lesnar. Well, you go with the quick fix, and that's what happens, I guess. You get what you pay for. Next week, we are down to the final three, the top three of our top 10 Royal Rumble Greatest Championship Matches countdown. So as Gorilla Monsoon used to say, we're getting down to the nitty-gritty here. And so that'll be fun to be able to reveal that next week on episode 581. Follow me on Twitter if you're not already doing so. At Solomonster is my handle on there. I'm the Solomonster on Instagram, where one of my New Year's resolutions is to start posting more on Instagram. And for the people who have asked me, yes, the Lyft code is still active. So if you want to save on your first Lyft ride. You have to sign up for an account. Use the promo code Solomonster. That will get you a discount once you take your very first ride with your Lyft account, with the Lyft app. And it may be different depending on where you live. I don't know that it works internationally. So this is probably a US-only thing. I've had people who have tried to... I get notifications in my app that, you know, so-and-so cashed in or tried to cash in on their promo, and I get nothing out of it because they're based in the UK or some other country. So maybe you guys, you might still get a discount, but I don't get anything. But use that code. Solomonster is the promo code. You'll get a discount on your first ride of either $5 or $10, I think it is. And spread the word. That code can be used by anybody. I will be back here with a brand new episode, hopefully feeling a lot better. I don't know how I made it through the show. My left nostril is completely closed at this point, and my throat is still on fire. But there was a lot to get to this week. I know you guys enjoy the prediction stuff, and once Mean Gene passed away, I had all these thoughts going through my head. I said, I can't miss this show. I got to talk about Mean Gene. I got to go through all the great memories of his career, and hopefully you guys enjoyed that little audio intro I put together last night. Took me a couple of hours, but happy to do it, and very sorry that Mean Gene is no longer with us. I look forward to whatever tribute they put together for him on Raw tomorrow night. I will see you guys back here next Sunday for a brand new episode. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. Let's keep our fingers crossed for the first Raw and SmackDown of 2019 that we actually see some real change. I am skeptical, but I am keeping an open mind, and either way, I'll be here to talk about it next week. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
The Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.